Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Press one for democracy. Bobby Rodriguez. Good evening, everybody. Press one for democracy here on Coffee Party Radio. Bobby Rodriguez sitting in for Dan Aronson, who is away. Wanted to say hello to all my fellow activists out there, certainly in Coffee Party USA, as well as people against the NDAA and Normal and all the other wonderful activist groups that are out there working together. And that's what this show is going to be about. We wanted to talk a little bit about being an active activist. I know you guys have heard me talk about that before. I just want to read a little something, a little press release that we did for the show. And then we can jump right into it. Our society is perhaps faced with more challenges than ever before. In our past, we have had major singular issues that has mobilized us to stand up for tyranny, against tyranny, or evil at every turn. But never have we been faced with the avalanche we have piling on our road now. The NDAA, the NSA, the TPP, industrial hemp bans, ballot access, drones, continued warmongering, corporate personhood, money in politics to such a high degree, identity politics, corporate media, and so much more. With such a full plate of problems facing us and an expansion of these problems on the horizon, we need to stand up, and we need to deal with this, and we need to do it together. So one of the things that's happening is the People Against the NDAA, PANDA, has launched a series of concerts in order to do just that, bringing people together to talk about the important issues of our time. And the next event is June 7th, this week in Albany, New York. The Green Party will be there, the Libertarian Party will be there, Empire State Normal will be there. We are a Hemp History Week event. The Bill of Rights Defense Committee will be there. Shahid Buttar, the Executive Director, is speaking and performing. Occupy will be there, the Tea Party will be there, and a number of artists, including Immortal Technique, which is probably the biggest underground artist in the world, Saving Abel, fantastic rock and roll band that's been out there for years with a number of hits, The Siren, Casey Varick, and Jordan Page, who's going to be joining us here shortly, a full-time activist artist that tours the country and the world, talking about tyranny and reminding us that we need to do something about our rights, making sure that we stand up for them and we work together. So I want to introduce this event this week and some of the participants. We have a number of speakers that are speakers and artists that are going to be joining us tonight. Dan Johnson will be here, the executive director and founder of PANDA, People Against the NDAA. Sharon Revert will be here, the executive director of Peachtree Normal, talking about her participation in the Atlanta concert and also about the upcoming Albany event, which Dr. Uma is going to be speaking about. We also have a couple of other guests, a number of other activists in various other areas, including a good friend here locally in Georgia, Beth Pollack, who I actually call Beth Liberty. Her house is basically known in the area as Liberty Central. a marvelous, marvelous activist who keeps everybody going, basically. Gives us a lot of push and gives us a place to get together and socialize and talk about the things we're trying to do. So with that, I want to get into the show. Obviously, I want to always remind everybody that we are about civility and facts here at the Coffee Party. We are a transpartisan organization. Everybody gets to turn. Everybody gets to speak. Everybody gets to air their opinion. We are here to work together. We are not here to talk down to anybody. We are not here to say that somebody is wrong and somebody's right. We're here to share. We're here to work together. And we have to do something about what's going on in society, without a doubt. So we're going to dive right into it. I see I have some people here in the chat room, so I want to say hello. I'm going to put a link in the chat room so people can look at it when I'm talking about the Take Back Tour, so people can understand a little bit about that who don't know about it. Let me see here. Do I have anybody asking to speak at this time? I believe so. Let's see here.
Hello?
Area code 401. You're on Press 1 with Democracy with Bobby Rodrigo. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What would you like to say?
Well, my name is Paul. I'm originally from Rhode Island. I'm in Georgia. And largely, I just pretty far right-wing, actually. And I'm curious as to just like a dialogue to see where we can meet. I have been on the Coffee Party Facebook, and while I can understand that the goal is transpartisanship, I have seen a lot of just partisanship there, and there I've had constructive dialogue with some people that, while being somewhat leftist, they can still have a good conversation. You know, while there's some that are not, and frankly, I'm not really sure where to start. I just, there's a lot of things that I could discuss. What I thought I would do is just kind of just, you know, whatever you want to talk about, I can give my view on.
Fantastic. You know, it's interesting that you brought that up, is because one of the things that has been discussed in. We have what's called a working group called the Coffee Party Newsroom, and a number of us get together to talk about subject matter, goals, what we might be doing right or wrong as a group as far as our newscasting and the way that we are discussing things with people from the membership standpoint, as well as the people on the radio show and everything. And one of the things that has happened, without question, is that the Coffee Party has tended to be moved to partisanship and away from transpartisanship, and we have actually been one of the voices, along with a number of other people, that have been pointing that out, because we are tending to do that. Myself, my personal political history, I come from the progressive side, but I am, I guess, if I was to, I don't like identity politics, but if I was to identify something, I would call myself a constitutionalist. I'm certainly more liberty-orientated. I do not like parties because they tend to be corrupt. And, you know, from what I've seen over the years, especially lately with money in politics and such, but I will just make that comment, and I'm glad you called, and absolutely we're going to be talking about a number of things, and I'll actually just stay with us. I'll put you on mute, and I'll come back to you absolutely later.
Okay, thank you.
Fantastic. It looks like our first guest is here. I'll get to 415 here in a minute. Our first guest is here. I want to introduce this gentleman. His name is Jordan Page. Actually, I'm going to go grab a link for his webpage. But I have to tell you, he is a full-time activist artist, a marvelous artist, fantastic artist. And he is a full-time activist artist, and he is a family man. He actually just had his fifth child, fantastic. But he's out there working with everybody. He wants to participate in everybody. I won't presume to tell you his personal politics. I don't need to do that. He certainly can tell you. But I can tell you that he is a supporter of fighting the indefinite detention provision of the NDAA, which puts him very high on my list of wonderful people. I want to bring him on. So, ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce to you Mr. Jordan Page.
It's Anarchy.
Hey, Jordan, how are you?
I'm good, man. I pressed 2. Is this Anarchy or what?
No, you know, it's so funny you said it. I didn't even tell everybody. You know, when I invited Jordan to be on the show, I told him the name of the show. I press 1 for democracy, and he says, well, I won't press 1 for democracy. He's going to press 2 for anarchy. I love it.
How's it going,
How
buddy?
How are you doing? You know, it's good. You know, it's all about the tour at this point, getting ready to get up to Albany on Wednesday and get ready for the show.
For which
a
I
lot
am very
of,
excited. It's going to be a really good time. I've never shared the stage with Immortal Technique, so I've been a fan of his for quite some time. So I'm excited to meet him. And you know, we did a show. I'm sure everybody who listens to knows we just did a show down in Atlanta last weekend, and that was really fun. And we got to meet Saving Abel and the Siren and lots of great artists were there. But and Saving Abel and the Siren will also be in Albany this Saturday, so it's gonna be a really good time.
It is, you know, I was talking to Immortal Technique out in California for the event that we did out there, and he's a marvelous guy. I it was the first time I had met him, but when it was actually suggested by me to go seek him out for the tour by the production company that's involved in the event in Albany, Rustic Justice Productions and Dave Rabin. He actually suggested 2 people. He actually was the gentleman that suggested that I approach Shahid Buttar from the Bill of Rights Defense Committee as well. David, you'll meet David this weekend, of course. He's going to be on the show here in a little while. And you know, I had heard text music, of course, but I've never listened to any interviews. So I decided to listen to some of the interviews, and he certainly knows what he's talking about, and as you all do, as you do, you guys are involved. There's no question about it, and I know that there are plenty of issues that you address on a daily basis on your Facebook page, certainly more importantly through your music all the time. You know, everybody needs to listen to Jordan's music. He's a marvelous musician, and he wrote actually. When you can tell him a little bit about the song that you wrote for the NDAA, a little bit of history
sure.
of that about that, Jordan.
Okay, well, you know, this bill came up on my radar pretty quickly because, as you said, I'm pretty plugged into these things, and I knew about it as it was coming up the ranks. And there was such public outcry about the NDAA in 2012, really it was more like end of 2011, wasn't it? Or
right. Yeah, because that's
so,
when the first vote was 2011. Yeah.
Right. So I was paying really close attention. There was a lot of public outcry. They took the clause out, and then Obama refused to sign it until they put it back in. And that's really. That's really like the last straw for a lot of people. You know, when I get confronted a lot in airports because my guitar case is covered with inflammatory political stickers, and so people are always wanting to give me their 2 cents. And you know, I say, do you know about the NDAA? And they're like, what's that? And I said, okay, well here we go. And I explained to them that the president that they love so much, this cult of personality, you know, wants them. Everyone is in the category of potential terrorists, according to this guy and according to this bill. So, and he refused to sign this bill without that in there, and it passed. And there was about 30 minutes of debate on the Senate floor for one of the biggest and most horrendous pieces of legislation ever devised in the mind of man. And
93-7 was the Senate vote. 93
yeah, and that should really tell the American people, you know, where the government is at. They are not your friend. They are not your representative. They are happy to have you shipped off to Gitmo or any number of secret prisons they have all over the world to be tortured indefinitely without any contact with your families or friends or legal counsel for the rest of your life, under the auspice of suspicion of wrongdoing. And there's no definition of what that means. So they really have carte blanche, whatever they want. And this is a very unoriginal idea. Okay,
right.
This has been done before, and that's the lead up to the song. Is that, you know, the indefinite detention idea has been done before in many other dictatorships in our recent past. Not we're not talking in the Middle Ages. You know, we're talking about the 20th century. This was going on. It was going on in Russia. It was going on in China. It was going on all over the world. In Germany, I mean, take your pick. These globalist, you know, elites, they build up their conquests off of the ones that have come before, and they improve upon them, and they take the things that work for them, and they just do them better or more efficiently, and it's clear with the way that this how easily and how streamlined this bill was in going through the Senate. That they've really, you know, that they just knocked it out of the park. I mean, like, this is a nail in all of our coffins. This bill was passed for me. It was passed for you, Bobby. It was passed for most of the
absolutely.
People that are listening to a show like this. It was passed for you, you know, and everyone needs to understand that and you know, join together and wake more people up, because public opinion is the only thing that matters. I mean, politics does not matter. The Constitution doesn't even matter when you come right down to it, okay? Because they don't care about it. We can care about it all day long.
The NDAA law proves it.
If the NDAA can be passed in America, then there is no Constitution. There is none. Because there is no law that is more clearly defined as unconstitutional than the NDAA. And it is a standing law in America, okay? And so I wrote this song 2 days after Obama...
Amazing.
Exactly. 2 days after Obama signed this horror into law, I wrote a song called The World Can't Wait. And it was all about history repeating itself. And there's this real big climactic section in the song where it goes, you know, another place in time, the living and the dying dance in deadly endless circles. And anyone can see what was and what will be, because to be sure, what's happening has happened before. You know, and we all know, and what I mean by that is we all know where this road leads. You know, I mean, it's anybody can see what's going to happen if you look at the past. If you look at history, you see what indefinite detention is connected to. It's connected to genocide. It's connected to totalitarianism. And that is where we're heading. That's what this bill is all about. It's about silencing dissent and making people afraid. And changing the culture to a culture of fear rather than a culture of resistance. And so our job is to counter that, and I'm doing it with music, and I'm trying to get this song, you know, circulated far and wide, you know, to give people hope and to give people strength and fortitude to keep fighting and to keep spreading the message. Because, again, like I said before, public opinion is the only thing that matters. Public opinion sways elections. Hell, it's the reason that McDonald's has a salad option. You know, there's no reason for McDonald's to have a salad option other than, you know, like the culture changed. Changing the culture is the only thing that I care about. I don't care who's president. I don't care about any of that. All I care about is the culture, because the culture is what allows and condones torture, what allows and condones indefinite detention, or illegal, immoral, unjustified, unconstitutional wars of aggression. If our culture didn't approve of these things or didn't give its silent consent, these things would not happen.
That is so true. And just to remind everybody, too, when you were talking about history, for example, the biggest example, of course, that we have in this country that people can put their hands on, there are people who are alive that they can talk to, is what they did in World War II to Japanese Americans, or it doesn't really matter who they were, but they put over 100,000 people in internment camps and definitely detained them. They did not give them access to the courts. They did not give them bail. They did not give them a lawyer. They did not charge them with anything. They just said, They had an executive order written, and they put and they did it to Italian Americans, and they did it to German Americans too, all based upon the fact that if you look in the papers back then, it's the same rhetoric that they used, for example, post 9/11. There's no difference in it. It's the only difference in it is the ethnicity that they attach it to, because the same hatred that they professed back then is being done now, and then of course now they have extended it. So here we have an organization, for example, Coffee Party, whose platform, besides being civility and facts, is based upon the ridiculous amount of money in politics and the fact that corporations somehow become people, and these are some things that need to be stopped along with the other bad things in the world. Well, like you described, they are talking about us because we are anti-government when it comes to those items, without a doubt.
Well, that's what we have. We have corporate-run government. We have the definition of fascism. Maybe we don't have ovens right now, you know, but people act like that could never happen here. I mean, they don't realize that all the continuity of government laws that are on the books right now are they were enacted poising the presidency to become an immediate dictatorship in the event of a national emergency or catastrophe. You know, which is completely undefined. In fact, point of fact, we were never undeclared from a state of emergency after 9/11. So legally, we're still in a state of emergency.
Right. You know,
everybody's got their creature comforts. They've got their distractions, and so they think that everything's okay. But none are more falsely enslaved than those who falsely. None are more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe that they're free. And that's what we have in most of the population of this country.
Without a doubt. And I'm looking at my board, and I see that 415, I see you there. We're going to get you on. I see that our next guest is on, and you guys know each other. And it's Dan Johnson, the executive director of People Against the NDAA. So I want to bring him on to say hello.
All right.
How are you, Dan?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Not bad. You're on with myself, Jordan Page, Coffee Party Radio, Press One for Democracy.
I was just listening into the show and enjoying it quite well.
Fantastic. I know that you have much to say about both the indefinite detention provisions of the NDAA, which Jordan, of course, talked about so eloquently and so correctly, and then, of course, about the next step in the battle for stopping the tyranny.
Well, I mean, I have much to listen, more than much to say, because it's amazing and really exciting for me to listen to someone speak about the NDAA with such eloquence that I didn't train or didn't work with and still is concerned about the issue, which is just, I'm enjoying this conversation just sitting back and listening.
Well, you know, guys, this was a big issue for me before I ever knew about Panda. And
sure.
I was actually very pleasantly surprised to learn that there was such an organization. And anything having to do with nullifying the National Defense Authorization Act or waking people up to it is something that I wanted to be part of. And that's why, you know, I was very excited when you guys reached out to me to be part of the Take Back Tour. And it's something I'm very passionate about and, you know, want to see become successful, because it's a campaign like anything else. I mean, campaigns are, you know, I could care less who gets elected. All I care about is the educational aspect of campaigns, and that's
right.
What this tour is. We're trying to wake up the populace and help them understand that this is a real law that's on the books, and it affects them, and it could affect them at a moment's notice. But by the time that they wake up, it could be too late. So,
you know what's interesting about this law? I tell people, and you said it earlier as well. I tell people that in my view, It's seriously the worst law that's ever been written in how it destroys constitutional protections from the Constitution. And I want to enumerate them just real quickly, because it really highlights how bad this is. You were talking earlier about, for example, no access to the courts when you're indefinitely detained. Well, access to the courts is a First Amendment protection. The right to petition the government for redress of grievances, which is also access to the courts, obviously. That's one of the ways that you petition the government. So now we have the First Amendment gone. literally in the language of the law. Then you talk about Fifth Amendment, which has a number of things. It has bail. It has life, liberty, and property without due process. You cannot lose them. So you have the Fifth Amendment gone in one and the same law. Then you have the right to counsel. You have the Sixth Amendment gone. So, and you can actually make a presentation about probable cause. You have probable cause removed, so you have the Fourth Amendment. So in one law, they have decided that the protections of four Bill of Rights do not apply anymore to anyone. And it's insane. It's insane.
As much as I absolutely agree with that point, I don't think people quite grasp the gravity. And I won't go through, I'll assume some of your listeners are very familiar with the Constitution, and I won't go through each of these and explain exactly what they are. But just to give the full rundown, here's what is specifically, we're not talking about the battlefield provision. We're talking about the specific provisions violated by the NDAA without any implications. Here's a short list. Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2. 2, Section 1, Clause 8. Article 3, Section 2, Clause 3. Article 3, Section 3. Article 6, Clause 2. 1st, 4th, 5th, 6th, 8th, 9th, 10th, and 14th Amendments. And those are just what is directly violated if I'm not counting the battlefield provision, because if I'm counting the battlefield provision, it negates the entire Constitution, because it now puts us under the control and the direction of the Geneva Conventions and the international laws of war.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. And everybody needs to hold their elected officials accountable. Everybody needs to talk about it, along with all these other issues. Guys, if you don't mind for a second, I'm going to bring in one of our callers here for a question. I have area code 415 coming in. What's your name and what's your question, and where are you calling from?
Oh, hi, this is Dave Graben from Rustic Justice. This is
Hey, Dave, another guest.
A California phone number. I just texted Bobby to let him know I was a 415, so he didn't think I was calling for a question. Great to hear you guys all talking about, you know, these really important issues on there and getting the word out. And I'm really excited for this tour. I think it's going to be a great, great success for all of
you. Well, Dave, let me jump in and tell everybody who you are.
Okay.
This is Dave Graben. He just became a doctor, actually. Graduated from medical school, if I have that correct. Telling me he just became a doctor, so that has to be what that means.
Somebody probably has their phone on speakerphone because there's a reverb.
So David also is the owner of Rustic Justice Productions, which is an underground music label in Albany, and he has been working tirelessly on the Panda Take Back Tour, both for the Albany and nationally. He's been involved. He has helped immensely. We're so glad to have him on board. One of the reasons why this is going to be a fantastic success is because of the artists that he's bringing in from the local area, and as well as his work and his recommendations of some of the people that we should have that I pursued. But David and I have been talking about this tour for a long time. Jordan Page and Dan Johnson are on the phone call, and Coffee Party USA is listening in the chat room. So, David, glad to have you. And what's your thoughts about, first of all, activism? Our show format is a call to action. What is making people come out and working together on a number of issues, starting with the NDAA and other things? I know you're involved in a number of things.
Oh, that's a really good question. You know, I think part of the biggest thing I think these shows are really important, first off, in promoting activism in the community. They take on, the NDAA, as you know, we've been talking about, is probably one of the most significant and important issues of our time. I mean, it directly and overtly negates the Bill of Rights. And so that's obviously an important issue that is something that really brings to the forefront, you know, a time for resistance and people coming together. And I think that also draws a lot of people's attention to things that are actually happening more on the local level, which is really interesting, because when people start to become aware of things nationally and the way that their rights may be affected on a national level, they start to look locally and see, how does this affect me here? And then they realize that the same kinds of manipulation and marketing tactics that are used to convince people of one thing or another thing, or to vote one way or another way, or to buy something, you know, that has GMO product or not, are used all throughout our entire capitalist world, effectively. And everything that we do every day, without thinking most of the time, contributes to that same business machine that keeps running, that really is supporting everything that people are doing. And I think, you know, having a tour like this is essential, because it not only draws attention to the way that these our rights can be abused, and we as individuals and citizens and residents can be taken advantage of by a leadership, but it really gives an incredible, I think, invigoration of local community, which is really fascinating, and, you know, allows people to start to reflect on what they can do in their own personal lives to make a difference. And I think Dan Johnson really imparted that to me as well when he was talking, and that really made us connect, because we were both thinking about it on the same lines. And I think that is really going to, you know, push these tours forward as people start to continue with the momentum that we hopefully set in the wake of events.
That's fantastic. And, you know, one of the things I'll point out to everybody that we haven't mentioned, one of the reasons why Albany, New York was picked for one of the locations of the Take Back Tour was Albany, New York was one of the first places that enacted a law fighting the indefinite detention provision of the NDAA and the authority of the federal government to get help by the local government in enforcing that law. It was the very first, and that is when I met David, and the Albany legislation in the front of the Common Council, which was 11 to nothing, we spoke at, but Dan was responsible for getting us together and initiating this. So it was only fitting that the tour goes through some place where it all began, as far as now, if I'm not mistaken, the count, Dan, is seven different jurisdictions that now have enacted legislation. Is that not correct?
Yeah, six following Albany. And it really is, you touched on, it makes sense for the tour to come back through. It's like coming home, because I've never been to Albany. I've never been to Albany. It'll be my first time there, and I'm very much looking forward to it. I know that there are great people out there, but I felt like I was a citizen of Albany that night when 100-some-odd people and 15 organizations and 3,000 phone calls and emails were up in front of the city council, and then they passed, and it was protest. I mean, they did not want to pass our resolution. They wanted very, very little to do with it. Council member Anton Konev, who I believe will be speaking at the tour. One of the things I've never talked about before, but I'm glad I'll get the chance to talk about, because Dave's on the line, and Dave hasn't heard this. One of the real, there are many inspirations for the Take Back Tour, but one of the real inspirations was when Rustic Justice showed up for that vote that night and played a little. It was Jesse Calhoun and a friend of his with a guitar, and the energy that brought to the audience, and the excitement and the passion that brought to everyone there who stayed for, how long were you guys there? 4 or 5 hours?
Oh, we were there. We were there for hours. We were, the vote happened at we talked, and the vote happened towards the, we were there at least 2 hours. Isn't that right, Dave?
Yeah, at least 2 hours.
and that,
and I think
music.
Jesse spoke first, if I remember right, for Jesse. Yeah, Jesse came in after, but there were so many great speakers.
Jesse came in after you, but Jesse and little Dave Panza, Apocalypse the Linguistic Mystic, they opened it up at the door. I was filming
yes,
it.
Yes, they did.
God,
he was good.
And that's one
he
of the
was
inspirations.
So good. Yeah, he was good.
And I should say that Jesse and Little Dave are actually two of the biggest inspirations for, local inspirations for Rustic Justice, and they've sort of been with us the whole way, and Jesse's campaign for mayor was just another way for us to make local issues known, that was inspired both by Panda and by, you know, everything that you guys are doing out there, so... Thanks for...
You know, it was interesting. One of the speakers, one of the organizations that was there, a gentleman that spoke was a retired Marine officer from Vietnam War, and it was Veterans for Peace. And Dan has heard me talk about this before, but everybody that spoke, he was the one that struck a chord for me, both for being a vet and just the whole scenario of how dangerous this law is. And he was talking about how he works around the world, and he talks to Hezbollah and Hamas about peace. He travels. And how this law easily can just pluck him out of the world affiliations, associations, on the basis of him going around the world and trying to promote peace. And here I am looking at a gentleman who served the Vietnam War, so he was easily in his mid to late 60s talking there about this, and I'm like, this is why we need to stop this. I think that's an inspiration for another song, Jordan. I'll have to introduce you to him.
It could be.
I'll have to introduce you to him when you're in Albany. I know you're on a writing binge from when I seen you last week. You're writing away, that's for sure.
You know, I took some time off from writing, not by choice. I just had nothing, and then the last 3 weeks I've cranked out 3 new songs, and
it's the new baby. Jordan just had his fifth child, everybody. It's the new baby. We know what's going on. Come on now.
That could be it, man.
that'll certainly get your heart pumping in the right direction. That's for sure, no doubt about it.
Oh yeah, man. Babies are great motivators. I tell you that much. I've learned that much. So, and they're the reason I'm doing what I do. Every morning I get up and I see these old faces, and I'm like, you know, this is these kids are the reason that I put myself out there and have become a public figure, you know, speaking out against this injustice. Because I want the world that they inherit to be better than the one that I inherited from my parents. So that's my that's
my
modus operandi.
I think, David, that you're on speaker again. I'm going to mute you. There you go. Okay.
I'm going to have to pop off here. I have another interview I have to go do, but I want everybody to know that, you know, we have this amazing event happening this weekend in Albany, New York, the Take Back Tour for People Against NDAA. I will be there, melting faces as only I can, and Immortal Technique will be there, Saving Abel, The Siren. It's just going to be a lot of local bands. It's going to be a great time, and it's not just a worthy cause. It's a cause that every single person in this country and in the world is affected by, whether you know it or not. So supporting Panda, supporting this organization is paramount to get the word out. And, you know, just make sure you buy your tickets and come rock out with us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, Jordan, I appreciate you coming on. I'll be saying hello to you later, and I'll be seeing you later on this week. The best to you always, and I appreciate you coming on and saying hello.
Same here, Bobby. Thanks so much. Have a good night, guys.
Thanks, Jordan. Thanks, David.
Okay, bye.
So, Dan, I wanted you to give an idea to everybody about what happened in Congress when you were in Washington, D.C., when you went up to be interviewed on Breaking the Set. You also... went into chambers and watched the vote in the House for the 2015 NDAA. And I'd like you to let everybody know what happened on that too, please.
Well, there's a lot of talk amongst the community and amongst the resistance about how controlled Congress is by certain elements, certain special interests. And I know you talk quite a bit about it. Coffee Party talks quite a bit about the influence of money and particularly special interests in politics. And I don't frequent D.C. I don't like to go there. It's not a place I willingly go to. And in fact, if they just fell off in a lake one day, I guess I can't say I'd shed a tear. But that aside, noting when I went, I was the honored guest of Congressman Justin Amash, who of all the people on the Hill I probably respect the most. And I was sitting in the gallery watching them vote on the 2015 National Defense Authorization Act. There were two key things that I noted of why this has to be fixed at the local level. Among many, many other arguments, something that just appeared so poignant to me. And the first was the nonchalance. There was one amendment that would have repealed the authorization for use of military force and therefore crippled the NDAA. It was the Adam Schiff Amendment. Now, it wouldn't have gone after the war powers of the president, but as far as legislatively, it would have removed Congress's approval. And there was another amendment that just would have gone after the NDAA detention provisions. And when those amendments came up for a vote, members of Congress were literally laughing. They were talking about lunch and their wives and the amazing things that were happening that day. And it was if they were just deciding on a bet on a horse race. It was not as if they were deciding the future of liberty in the country. It was they were just betting on a horse race, and they're having a jolly old time, and they may as well have been drinking. That
amazing,
astonishing,
alarming,
alarming. Yeah, it was just crazy. And what the second thing that I noted, and probably the more poignant reason why it will never get done, it's not just the nonchalance, but when Open Secrets publishes its list of who all is paid off by which, they publish a list specifically referring to what is generally known as the military-industrial complex, people who profit from war. That way, that's the war on terror, the war on drugs, the war, Afghanistan, Iraq, whatever. These are people who profit from war. And they are primary movers and shakers. My own senator, Rob Portman, got paid, I want to say, I don't remember the exact number now, it's like $272,000 by a night vision company, part of the military-industrial complex, to sign on to the indefinite detention portion of the 2012 NDAA. On Open Secrets, there are the top two people in the nation who are paid off by the military-industrial complex as far as campaign contributions are, surprise, surprise, Barack Obama and Buck McKeon. Buck McKeon's chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. When I was in Congress, I was there for probably an hour. One congressman, a Democrat, Buck McKeon's a Republican, one Democratic congressman got up and said and started talking about how great Buck McKeon was. And it went from a congressman talking about how great Buck McKeon was to a little bit of a round of applause to a standing ovation from both sides of the aisle.
Wow.
And again, and then when Buck McKeon got it to speak, once again, both sides of the aisle. And when he was referenced, once again, they bow to the military-industrial complex in Congress. And it doesn't matter whether they're Republican, whether they're Democrat, independents, for goodness sake. Look at Senator Joe Lieberman. What did he give us? He gave us the Department of Homeland Security. He's a bona fide independent. So when I'm looking at Congress, I'm seeing this deference. It was eye-opening to see the absolute bowing and deference to the military-industrial complex on full display in our nation's capital.
Amazing.
Yep.
Amazing. You know the other, and this has been going on, obviously, you know, with the Patriot Act forward, you know, because obviously the attack, the open and blatant, I call it, the open and blatant attack on the protections that have afforded us in the Bill of Rights for our natural rights was obviously openly attacked. And everybody's heard me say this before. Basically, what Congress is doing is that it is legislating capricious and arbitrary actions more than anything else. They're not having any, you know, there was recently, just, and this happens all the time because they play the divisive game with us, and they say, well, like just with this POW situation, for example, Congress is upset that the president didn't confer with them and give them the 30 days notice, and, you know, and right or wrong or indifferent, whatever. But my point was, is, well, if you would stop expanding a presidential power, then maybe you wouldn't get pissed off as much or something, because that's all Congress does, is it expands executive power, and it allows everybody to be capricious and arbitrary. I mean, that's all that is. That's all that they're doing is, you know, the NDAA is a perfect example when you have, let's give the executive all this power. So they can do what they want. And then, well, let's not give them anybody to answer to other than the citizen. And, of course, we all saw how the lawsuits went. I know you talked about, Dan, you talked about that on Breaking the Set when you were on with Abby Martin, for example, just recently. You know, and how
well,
you had.
I do want to jump in really quick because I think this is very important for you to understand. If they do not understand this, if not all of our efforts against the NDAA and against indefinite detention and military use on U.S. soil is going to be completely wasted. Don't think in the box of legislation. Shortly after Pearl Harbor, we know that FDR signed Executive Order 9066. And this executive order basically allowed the detention of 120,000 Japanese Americans. What we don't often focus on, I didn't even know this until about 3-4 weeks ago, is that was a after the fact. FDR declared martial law in Hawaii and detained 1,000 Japanese Americans without charge or trial, American citizens, in Hawaii before Executive Order 9066. That was a, oops, I did it already, now let's make it legal. The NDAA
exactly.
Is the same thing. The 2012 NDAA does not grant the president any new authority. It is a congressional affirmation of the authority that Bush claimed and the authority that Obama claims. And if we
right.
only focus on getting rid of the NDAA, and we think that once we've removed black text on a piece of paper, we've done absolutely anything to protect our liberty and our children's future, we're dead wrong, we're falling into their game, and we're wasting our time.
Yep, great point. Great point.
Second.
Absolutely. I see we have another guest on, so I want to change to another issue. The executive director of Peachtree Normal is going to be joining us, Sharon Revert. And as you all know, I'm also a big medical marijuana advocate, as well as the Take Back Tour as part of Hemp History Week. And one of the coalitions that we always want to work with and bring out into the community is our friends, our brothers and sisters from Normal. And from all the hemp organizations. So I want to introduce to everybody Sharon Revert from Peachtree Normal. How you doing, Sharon?
I'm doing great, Bobby. Thanks for having me on tonight. I've enjoyed the conversation thus far.
Well, we're trying, but it's always better. It's always nice to have somebody else come in with a fresh and some new subject matter, and we're glad to have you here. We have a nice amount of callers on, and we have a pretty active chat room as far as listeners are concerned, Sharon. So you have a good audience. Dan Johnson is on, as you heard, and Dave Rabin is on, Rustic Justice, who I mentioned just finished medical school. He's also a medical marijuana advocate and very interested in helping society, you know, get the best medical care as they can and opening up all the windows to everything. But I wanted to touch base with you, first of all, as I mentioned, you are the executive director of Peachtree Normal. And how long have you been doing that?
We started about 2 years ago, and March was 2 years. So a little over 2 years, Peachtree Normal has been around.
Fantastic. And You have been an activist for how long, and how did you get involved in activism, and then specifically into normal?
Well, I got involved in activism unwillingly, like many of us. We see injustices, and we just can't sit silent anymore. The way I got involved is we had a militarized SWAT team come into our house looking for my 19-year-old daughter because a confidential informant said that she may have marijuana in our house. And they came in and woke us up in the middle of the night and really traumatized my entire family, not just the 19-year-old. And so I started thinking, where am I living now? This doesn't seem like the America that I grew up in. And I started, researching about the drug war and about our Constitution and getting more involved in researching what the heck was going on and the different things that had changed since I grew up. When I grew up, of course, we were more concerned about our preacher and our parents finding out that we had smoked pot than the cops. And the militarization of our police force has really shocked and scared me. And I did as much information seeking and finding as I could, and then I started educating others in my small community up in the North Georgia Mountains, and we made it a point to go after not only the magistrate court judge that had given the warrant, the no-knock warrant, and the sheriff that had okayed the raid. And 2 years after we started doing that, we kicked the sheriff out of office. And at that point, I realized that a few people working together could make a real difference, not only in the community, but also statewide, and as y'all are doing, nationwide. And we were so glad to be able to come out to the Take Back Tour. We were so glad when you invited us to come out, Bobby. We got to hear others' messages and got to educate a few people on our issue and realize that it's all pretty much the same issue. We are not free, and there is very little, if any, liberty left in the United States of America. And the drug war really points that out. We have a lot of SWAT team raids going on, and it seems like it's just the collateral damage of the war on drugs is okay with everybody because we're fighting drugs. But that's not, it's not working. Prohibition has not worked. It's not going to work. And we can't arrest our way out of this. So we're proud to be a part of the Take Back Tour. And I'm glad to hear that Empire Normal is going to be up in Albany this weekend. That's going to be real exciting. And I hope to see more footage of it.
Yeah, fantastic. And very well said. And you know, Normal, well, I've been an advocate with Normal forever. You know, back in when the only time you got to read about anything was in High Times Magazine, which, of course, has been supporting Normal forever as well. And it has always amazed me the fact that marijuana was made a Schedule One drug by the federal government, you know, essentially giving it the worst rating at all. And, of course, the drug thing is just ridiculous anyway. But just to put that in perspective, and then, of course, how they don't allow industrial hemp grown in this country as a side effect of that rating when actually it has no THC value at all in that regard. And,
correct.
Of course, again, we're talking about big money being an influence in this, both from the standpoint of the prison industrial complex, which isn't talked
mm-hmm.
about enough, in my view. And then, of course, when you have the bigger companies that are locking away industrial hemp, both from energy as well as plastics and the other. I mean, they're making cars out of hemp and have for years. Henry Ford made a car out of hemp, for example.
Exactly,
so,
and it ran on hemp oil as well.
Right, right. So you have this complete, and then, of course, we have a bad economy. So we have a way to really help fix our economy, our farming industry, and, of course, the 25,000 products that hemp is used. And then you talk about, on top of everything else,
the medical side of marijuana. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you talk about the liberty side of recreational use of marijuana, which, of course, has never killed anybody, unlike alcohol, for example. And prohibition does not work. You know, again, we're talking about the Constitution and liberty. All those things are tied together. And we all need to be talking about them, and I'm glad to have you on board. And I know that you have an event coming up, which I'm not going to be able to go to, unfortunately, involving – we were talking about the raid on your house, which is just an amazing, amazing thing to have to go through, I have no doubt. But I was just looking at your website, for example. Everybody, please do peachtreenormal.org. That's N-O-R-M-L. Where you have another example of how law enforcement has crossed the line from police departments to military units. Sheriff calls the harming of this baby acceptable collateral damage. Now, that statement is interesting. The sheriff calls the harming of this baby. So before we even go into, we're talking about a baby. And then, of course, you have the pictures of what happened there. It is simply amazing. And then, of course, the fact that they're chasing marijuana is so please tell me a little bit about that, please.
Right. We are bringing together, we're involved with the Georgia Taxpayers Alliance and quite a few other people, the ACLU, and quite a few groups are coming together on Saturday to redress our grievances due to a botched drug raid where the at the very least, they were. It was lazy policing. They did no investigation. And a few hours after a confidential informant told that he had bought drugs at a home, they went in and threw a flash grenade into the house, and it landed, for those who don't know, into a playpen where a 18, or I guess he was a 19-month-old little boy, nicknamed Boo Boo, B-O-U-B-O-U. You can look it up in Habersham County. The flash grenade went off in the playpen, and yes, it was pretty. He's pretty much called collateral damage. I guess babies being blown up, collateral damage, okay with everybody in that police force. I honestly don't know how they're sleeping at night, but we're calling together. We're going to be in Habersham County, Georgia. You can look it up. It's all over Facebook. It's all over the nation, actually. It's all over the news. And there'll be some national speakers there, and we'll be calling for the resignation and the firing of the police officers in charge, the magistrate court judge that gave the warrant, and the sheriff as well. If he feels like this is collateral damage, then he has no business running a police force in this state, at least. Maybe in another less free country, although I'm starting to wonder if there is one. So we'll be coming together from 11 to 1.
So everybody in the area, I mean, Habersham County is north Georgia, up in Interstate 85. Yep.
Exactly.
And
we're going to be up in the north
of the South Carolina border.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And,
we've got people from all
way.
Over the country coming, yes. And hopefully if anybody out there hears about it, if they have any questions, they can contact us at Peachtree Normal or the ACLU of Georgia. And, you know, if y'all can come out to that, if you're not going to be in the great state of New York at the Take Back Tour and you're in the South, head over to Georgia. We could use the assistance in trying to get these rogue police officers to follow the same laws that we all have to follow and be held accountable for their actions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Fantastic. Fantastic. You know, one of the things that I was so happy to have happen in working with Peachtree Normal was meeting Dr. Uma through you. And we thank you for that. And she has confirmed now that she's going to speak at the event in Albany. Actually, she's going to come up for the weekend.
Very good.
And yeah, and actually, I tried to catch her for the show tonight, but she just flew into Massachusetts, and about an hour ago, I spoke with her, and she was still on the airplane, so she wasn't going to be available tonight. But I wanted to ask you if you could talk a little bit about what she's doing. And who she is, and why it's important, why her work is important to all of us.
Yes. Dr. Uma Donabalan, she is a Harvard-educated medical professional. She is an MD and an MRO, and she's got so many letters, I'm not even going to continue them because I'd probably mess them up behind her name. A very educated woman. She has been working in cannabis therapeutics and specializing in that for the last 2 years, working in Washington State. And she has her license to practice there and in Boston, and she is in the process of updating and renewing her license in Georgia as well. She came to us through one of our members at Peachtree Normal, who has been a dear friend of hers for many years, and she is speaking out for medical marijuana. She's going to be involved in a new study that's coming out to help our veterans that have PTSD. They're going to be doing a study with 10,000 veterans in they have to be in one of the 22 legal medical marijuana states. And she's just an extremely eloquent doctor that brings not only her professional expertise in the subject, but brings total credibility to what we're talking about. She is to me, even a better spokesperson or at least equal to Dr. Sanjay Gupta. She's done just as much research, and she's also actually dealt with cannabis therapeutics with patients. She's seen over 4,000 patients, and she tells people that it is her two sayings, and I'll just put them out there now, are marijuana is not the entrance drug. It is the exit drug off of pharmaceuticals, and if you reach one, you teach 10. And that's her thing. She just reach one person and you teach 10. So I'm hoping everybody tonight will do some research on the NDAA and do some research on the drug war and see how closely related they are and how both are taking away our freedoms and liberties. And we need to all come together and build coalitions and work together to promote freedom and liberty in the United States.
Can I jump in real quickly and perhaps help wrap that up a bit?
Yes.
Go ahead, Dan.
Please.
I listened to the interview with, I believe it was the sheriff's deputy, who either threw the grenade or one of his buddies that threw the, it was a flashbang grenade, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay. At the baby and landed in the crib and such. And I found it peculiar that in his interview, he called the parents for placing their child in the way, and regardless of whether your opinion on drugs is legalize it or you have divergent opinions on that, he said that the parents who placed their child in the way of a police raid they did not know was coming were, and I quote, domestic terrorists. We had a board member of Arizona Normal in January of this year, Robert Caputo, write an article called Up in Smoke, Why Legalization Activists Should Fight the NDAA. And in it, he talks about a recent drill that was held in Redding, California. And it was, there's a local band there. I've been up there. It's a beautiful area. And basically, a red cell terrorist group, which is engaging in an effort to free a fellow marijuana grower from prison, launches two bomb blast attacks on a local dam, and then the 20 agencies have to respond, and the drill costs $500,000. This isn't just marijuana legalization. It isn't just NDAA. Marijuana legalization is a great example of attempting to take power away from the state, then the state just determines you a threat. And that's why the NDAA, I think, covers all aspects of activism. We're going to have a lot of people who disagree with each other at this event this weekend. And it covers all aspects simply because the the government can declare you a threat. Now, it could be this government. It could be the next government. It could be government you completely agree with this time and completely disagree with next time. It could be that you made a senator's wife mad. It could be that you stepped on the wrong line on the street. It doesn't matter. You can be called a threat and then not taken to trial, but eliminated. And I think that that really ties in why we're working so closely with Normal and how the drug war and the war on terror are both excuses for using – in Idaho, I hate to go on too long of a rant, but in Idaho, they did not pass a law this year, but barely. This law would have given the National Guard of Idaho participation in the asset forfeiture in any drug raid and the authority to act as a state law enforcement agency when going on drug interdiction, drug trafficking, and drug raids. These, both the war on drugs and the war on terror, are excuses for militarizing the police and bringing the military on U.S. soil.
Absolutely. And I would like to mention a book that your listeners may be interested in looking at, and it's called The Militarization – I'm sorry, I'm having the hardest time saying that word – The Militarization of the Police Force, and it's by Radley Balco, Rise of the Warrior Cop. Radley Balco. He is also now writing for – he used to write
Washington
for
Huffington Post,
and he's now writing for the Washington Post. He has mentioned this case in Georgia, and he's been invited to come down as well. So we're hoping that maybe he can – in a quick –
You know, that's wonderful. I happened to meet him at the the Students for Liberty Conference, the national conference in March – in D.C., actually me and Ted Metz, who works with Panda, I believe you met at the Atlanta event. We went to the Students for Liberty event, which was a marvelous event, and we actually met Radley and talked with him, and that's when I learned that he was no longer with the Huffington Post, and he gave us his card and stuff like that, and he's one of the people that we like to reach out to. Whenever we're in D.C. or whenever something we're hoping that gets a little national attention or something like that, he's a good man, and that's good. And I would recommend some other alternative journalists as well. You have there's actually BenSwan.com. Ben Swan, his organization, he's got some people in South Carolina that may be able to hop down there and cover that as well. I certainly can send you some contact information. Be happy to let them know what's going on. Send them a link. Those are the type of things they want to stay on top of. And, of course, there are many others, absolutely.
Great. Thank you so much. Well, I'm going to jump off here. I thank you guys for everything you're doing. Have a great time. We had a great time at the Take Back Tour in Atlanta, and I know y'all well as well in Albany. Take back our government, people.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, pleasure. Thank you for coming on, and we appreciate all the great information that you gave us. Keep fighting.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Certainly. So, everybody, as we move into our second hour, I'm going to take a break here, and I want to do some business. We certainly have to make sure that all the coffee party information is out there all the time. So, 1 second here. I'm going to mute you, Dan, for a second. And I'm going to take care of some coffee party business.
Hi, this is Dan Aronson, and you're listening to Press One for Democracy, heard here every Monday night on Coffee Party Radio starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Did you know that there's an entire lineup of Coffee Party Radio shows that airs each week? On Thursdays, our executive director, Janine Loudon, hosts Lunch with Loudon, starting at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Saturdays, Egberto Willis hosts Politics Done Right, starting at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the newest edition of our Coffee Party Radio family joins us on Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's Bud Fields with Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style. And remember, unlike our current federal government, Coffee Party Radio is of the people, by the people, and for the people. Each show, you'll have the chance to call in at area code 646-929-2495, so you can stand up and be heard. When you can't make it with us live, remember that all of our shows are available to you 24/7 in our online archives. So again, this is Dan Aronson on behalf of all Coffee Party Radio hosts and our entire membership saying thanks for joining us to discuss the issues of the day the Coffee Party way.
Hello everyone, this is John Cashin with the Coffee Party USA's Civics Minute. It is a time for the muckrakers to return. In the early 20th century, writers, photographers, and journalists stepped up to expose the injustices of their day. Back then, anything could be done to make a profit at the expense of the workers and the consumers. Among some of the practices were farmers being charged unfair rates by the railroad industry to move their produce, packing industries that didn't concern themselves with health and safety issues, and deplorable working conditions were being placed upon the workers at many factories, including the children that were also working as laborers. At the same time, there were many local, state, and federal elected leaders that were profiting by allying themselves with these industries at the expense of the public. Theodore Roosevelt used the term muckraker when he delivered his The Man with the Muckrake speech on April 15, 1906 in Washington, D.C. He stated, "In Pilgrim's Progress, The Man with the Muckrake is set forth as an example of him whose vision is fixed on carnal instead of spiritual things. Yet he also typifies the man who in this life consistently refuses to see the aught that is lofty and fixes his eyes with solemn intentness on that which is vile and debasing. Now it is very necessary that we should not flinch from seeing what is vile and debasing. There is filth on the floor, and it must be scraped up with a muckrake. And there are times and places where this service is the most needed of all the services that can be performed. Today, a muckraker has become known as someone that searches out and publicly exposes real or apparent misconduct of a prominent individual or business. But this kind of reporting has been playing second fiddle to the sensational 24/7 style of reporting being employed by the cable networks today. Tactics that strive to get the most profit at the expense of everyone else hasn't disappeared. And with today's social media and the ability of everyone to be citizen journalists, the need for the muckraker to expose these practices is more important than ever, so they can be held in check once and for all." Stay tuned for more Civics Minute segments as you listen to your favorite Coffee Party USA Blog Talk radio shows. From Paducah, Kentucky, this is John Cashin. Good day, everyone.
All right, Bobby Rodrigo back here. I'm Press One for Democracy, sitting in for Dan Aronson. I've got Dan Johnson, Executive Director and Founder of People Against the NDAA. I have Dave Raven on speakerphone, echoing his background, left justice deductions, and the newest doctor in the world, and all the work.
Thank you.
We're trying, Dave, to get you off the speakerphone. I know you're probably doing something important, and so we can have you on when you want to jump in. Dan, a couple things. I would like you to talk about, and of course, everybody, you know, if anybody wants to call in and ask any questions, as usual, 646-929-2495, please call in. We're going to be here for about another 45 minutes. I know I will be. I don't know how long Dan can stay or Dave, but we're going to be here until about 11 o'clock Eastern time. Dan, I was wondering if you could tell everybody how the Take Back campaign started. How did that come about?
Well, the Take Back campaign came about as a result of a conversation I had with a very wise gentleman in San Diego, California. I flew out there for Libertopia and gave a quick speech out there, but I ran into a man by the name of Ernest Hancock. He runs Freedom Phoenix. And I was telling him, Panda, at this point, it was September of last year, so Panda at this point was a little over a year and a half old, and I was telling him about the victories and successes we had, which, to be honest, as far as legislation signed into law, weren't any, but we had done some real fighting, real educating, And I was talking to him about how things worked and everything, and he patiently listened, and he did the kind of, okay, all right. And then he waits for me to finish, and he looks at me, and he goes, so let me get this straight. You're building a big collective to take on their collective, and collectively you're going to defeat collectivism? At which point I went, well, I guess he has a point. And when we really looked at the way Panda had operated, we had official chapters, we had official state teams, you had to get permission to use the logo, we covered our brand very well, we were watching out for our structure, everything was very down to point, we had built our own functioning bureaucracy, and what I looked at is, we're becoming the very thing we're fighting. Not that we're ever trying to put indefinite detention in place, but we're operating like the people we're going against. And
right.
The Take Back campaign is the result of something I recommend every organization do. It's called decentralizing. Now, one of the greatest fears of decentralizing is when you get rid of all control, you get rid of all control. You don't even know what these people are doing. They might be using your name. They might not be using your name. They might be going out there and absolutely being awesome or doing absolutely nothing, and you don't know, and you can't really do much about it. And so that's a real big fear for a lot of organizations that, well, we don't want to decentralize because then, I mean, what if these people don't do anything? And the conclusion we had come to is we had a 50% dropout rate in the organization before we decentralized. And I've been trying for months, almost a little over a year, trying to fix it, was not working. And so we decided to give this a shot. And the Take Back campaign came out of this flipping of mentality. No longer is Panda leading the charge against the NDAA. We now have the experience and tools and resources. We're going to sit back here. And if you want your liberty, I want my liberty. I work 10, 14 some odd hours a day on my liberty, my freedom, and pushing the NDAA resistance and Panda forward. I want my liberty. And what we decided is if you want your liberty, you're going to have to fight for it. You're going to have to step up. We're not going to push you. Here's the materials. Here's the information. Here's 2 years' worth of experience and expertise that you can pull on, but we are not going to run it for you. And when we launched the Take Back campaign, that mindset flip was just radical. I mean, no longer is Panda going to – you don't join us anymore. You used to join Panda. You used to go online and join Panda and become a part and become a cog in the machine. What we realized is people are motivated by three things. Number one – is mastery, the ability to master something. Number two is self-direction. I direct myself. And number three is contributing to a greater cause. We had two of those three elements. We never had the self-direction. So the Take Back campaign came out of this idea that maybe people should be able to run their own movement, that maybe if they really want it, they'll actually go out and push for their liberty. All we need to do is get out of their way. And when we did that, I mean, the first test was Albany. Albany was not run by us. Albany was run by Jesse Calhoun, Rustic Justice, a couple of local Tea Parties on the ground, a couple of local peace and justice groups. I mean, we did not run that. And then Webster and Oxford, they didn't – I mean, we're at Rutland now. We're at, as you mentioned before, we're at seven jurisdictions. Rutland, Massachusetts was the latest. I didn't even know – that Rutland was going on until I got an email message going, hey, Dan, did you hear we passed a resolution in Rutland? So
that was amazing,
gone from no victories and no activity before the Take Back campaign to when we decentralized and said, you know what, we don't have to act like a government to take on the government. When we did that, the activity shot up 300-400%. And people all across the country, seven jurisdictions now, and 60 to 70 are currently being worked on. I just got back from Kodiak, Alaska, and they had a meeting a couple of days ago with 20 people showed up, their first meeting ever. And, I mean, this is starting to absolutely explode because we finally added that last element, and that is we ain't taking it back for you. You are taking it back for you if you care.
Yep.
That's marvelous. That's so fantastic. It's happening. As you know, I'm deeply involved, and I see it as well, and it's wonderful to watch. And I want you to address something else, too, that is very important, because the more people hear this, in my view, the better off we are. One of the questions that was asked of you recently on Breaking the Set by Abby Martin, and everybody can watch that interview on YouTube on Breaking the Sets in, for RT.com. It was, 22nd of May on a Thursday. One of the questions that was asked of you is how do you deal with, or what do you have to say to people who say to you and other people who are around the age that you are that you're too young, you don't know what you're doing, you know, you're too young, you don't know what you're talking about, you have no experience. What do you say to that?
You know, this is really prevalent in politics, I've found. I was listening to the NBC panel discuss Edward Snowden's interview with Brian Williams. And one of their reasons why he wasn't credible, and whether or not you believe Snowden's credible, I think is a ridiculous reason, was because he was young and naive. He was only 30-something. Well, that is viewed as young and naive in politics. If you don't have a gray hair on your head, what on earth are you doing anywhere near political action? And the way I was brought up is we want you involved. You need to be involved in politics. You need to be involved in politics. And so when I finally did get involved, when I finally saw a cause, the NDAA, that I needed to get involved with, I figured this is what they want. They wanted us to get involved. So I brought 21 college students to my local city council in Bowling Green, Ohio. And what we found out the hard way was they don't want you involved. They want you to come out and vote and hold signs, and knock on doors, and be cannon fodder for elections. They don't want to listen to young people. And when John McCain and Lindsey Graham were criticizing Senator Rick Liberty, Rand Paul's filibuster on drones.
Everybody heard that name, Rand Paul. You know where that came from. That came from who?
One of the people on the line. I'll let them guess. but anyway... So you have that filibuster, and they come out slamming it, and they say, well, it's just a bunch of young libertarian kids in their dorm rooms. And this is pervasive. This is all throughout any political arena whatsoever. It's if you're young, what we need to do is we need to bring you in, and we need to teach you how it's done. And young people, especially today with the rise of the Internet and the breaking of the hold on information in this country, not to go off on a tangent, but the broadcast numbers just came out for cable TV. Guess what the average mean age for the most popular news show in the country, the Bill O'Reilly Show? What's the average mean age, or the mean age listening to that show?
My guess would be somewhere in the neighborhood of 45 to 55 at least.
25.
Really?
72 years old.
Wow.
72. The median age for MSNBC is 55, 56. Cable news does not have, and the government stranglehold on cable news does not have my generation. The Internet is what we grew up on, and the Internet is where we are at. And that's where we get our information from. Millennials and post-millennials and whatever generation you want to assign us to, we do not suffer from a government stranglehold on one source of information. And so millennials and my generation generally has some of the best ideas coming out, and that's why you saw the Ron Paul revolution. Regardless of whether you agree or disagree with the Ron Paul revolution, the fact is it got the younger generation the most involved of any campaign, including Barack Obama's campaign. My generation was more involved with the Ron Paul Revolution than the Barack Obama campaign for president. And the reason why is because it was, hey, you guys have a voice. Use it. And so one of the big things that, a lot of people do really want to bring the younger generation in, but they, A, make the mistake of talking to us like we're cannon fodder, and, B, they make the mistake of speaking in the wrong language. I was heading out to California to go speak at a Republican women meeting, and I was asked, you know, well, we have a projector. What kind of projector do you want? And I'm sitting there thinking, what kind of projector do I want? I mean, what kind of projector do I want? One that hooks into your computer? I mean, I was more polite than that, obviously, but that's what I'm thinking in my head. Like, I don't know, one that I can use on my computer? And she said, well, we have a slide projector, too. And to which case, I'm going, wait, what? You realize they stopped making slides for slide projectors when I was too young to know what a slide projector was. So you have the communication gap between my generation and the older generation. But the fact of the matter is, the reason my generation does not get involved in politics is, A, because every single time we step in the door, we're pushed away. We're cannon fodder. And we're not stupid. We're not sitting there going, oh, yeah, I get to knock on doors. Oh, my God, this makes me so happy. No, we're not cannon fodder, but we're treated that way. And number two is politics is made specifically to be boring. It's made to be something that, or number two out of three, rather, it's politics made to be boring. It's something, oh, well, we have to do it. Is politics annoying? Yes. Does it have a huge weight on our future? Absolutely. And that leads to the third and final point. Why young people do not get involved, part three of my long rant on this radio show, is we don't believe we can make a difference.
Right.
And what we have seen with the Take Back campaigns running all across the country is young people stepping up. And we have all young, old, all kinds of people in the movement. But we've seen young people stepping up and going, you know what? I can make a difference here because these guys are actually winning. These guys are actually doing it.
So I'm going to jump in here because we have another guest. And by the way, the chat room just Marianne Richards, one of the Coffee Party members, just said, awesome, Dan, by the way. We have another guest who we both of us happened to meet when we were out in California and then also who performed in Atlanta and is going to perform in Albany. We have Casey Barrick, the Siren, has joined us. Hey, Casey, how you doing?
And can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
All right. I don't get good service here, but, you know, we'll try.
Well, I'm glad
you
called.
You guys,
I'm glad you called. That's fantastic.
Why are you guys so cool? Why are you, Dan Johnson and Bobby Rodrigo, so cool? Love you guys. So keep being inspirational. People need to hear it. It's like positive reinforcement. You know, this entire planet's been hijacked by sociopaths in suits who want nothing but power, money, and to exploit this earth for all its resources, while enforcing poverty and man-made political-based religions that lead to international prejudices through childhood brainwashing. And this oligarchic corporatocracy disguised as freedom and independence will be the destruction of all nature. And this is our planet. And, you know, we're all brothers and sisters here worldwide. And there's millions upon millions of people rising up all over the world now. You know, if things do not start changing, we're trying. We're all trying, which is a start. If they don't continue down that path, you know, there will be a revolution because we are connected instantly in this world now. And people are standing up for their human rights, not their country's rights, not their political rights, for their human rights.
I couldn't have said it better. That's fantastic. You know, so everybody understands, a couple things about the Siren is, first of all, from a musical standpoint, he's a musician. He's a marvelous musician. He's a producer. He's an engineer. He's a writer. First and foremost, he's a marvelous musician. That's how I look at it. And he is
first and foremost, he's a marvelous human being with some musical talent too.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. that is true. Marvelous is enhanced by his ability to play music. But yes, you're right. We have to break it down properly. Thank you, Dan. Without a doubt. And we're talking about somebody who, from the standpoint of music is concerned, one of the things that he has done is he created his own musical genre called the Epic Step. And we'll talk about that in a second. And then also, of course, he is one of the great activists in the movement, without question. Well-versed in many issues. I've posted your website in the chat room, for example. We're going to make sure this goes around because this will be archived. We'll make sure everybody hears about you in the coffee party and where else. But I wanted to ask you, besides the obvious things that you just said, what if there was one thing or a couple things, what made you reach out and educate on some of the issues that you mentioned, some of the issues that your music talks about?
Yeah. I would say this has been a slow, ongoing process for me since I was a child. I used to go around to different churches and things like that on every Sunday, just randomly, different religions, different churches, just to see what they were about, experience things, and try to step inside the box and see what everybody else is seeing and analyze all angles. And went into the military for a second, just the entrance program, just to get a basic understanding of their process and their boot camp things and everything. And I just really like to research and experience things. So I started when I was young with this disdain for this paradigm that we're living in and this system that's politically based and religious based, when none of that helps humanity. It really doesn't. We need to be more scientific and, have more equality and transparency. So I've always had this feeling like something was off and something was wrong. I've been involved in, I came from a broken city, and there was a collapse of an industry there, and left a lot of it poverty-stricken and crime-filled, Youngstown, Ohio. And I saw how the authoritarian police and judges were mistreating the poor, and being in that, I myself had, my issues, and it's wrong. So they treat us like we're not equal to them, and that is really what developed it all. And I just want to try to put out a positive message for change in music and art, and let people look at different aspects of things that they normally wouldn't. That's the problem. It's not that people don't care or don't believe. They don't even think about it. They don't even ever think about it. And once you enlighten some people to some better things, usually they're pretty open to it, and that's good. That's all we can do, one by one or million by a million.
Fantastic. And before I ask you the next question, I just want to say, Dave Raven, who's on the line, Rustic Justice Productions, he's getting ready to sign off. Dave, I wanted to say thank you for coming on. I look forward to seeing you later this week. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Bobby. I really appreciate it. And thank you, Dan, and the Siren, and Peachtree Normal, and Coffee Time USA, and everybody else for helping out with this.
Fantastic. You have a good one, and we'll be talking.
Have a good night.
All right. Take care.
So I wanted you to tell us a little bit about what the Epic Step is, if you don't mind.
You can Wikipedia Epic Step. What I did was I was writing a lot of metal music and producing that, and I was always doing electronic stuff on the side, so I was always mixing them, electronic and metal, and eventually a formula came about that was dubstep, electro, and metal aspects all mixed together, and made that some years back. So that was what Epic Step was, and it usually has a lot of 8-bit circuit bending going on, tempo changes, things like that, but it follows pretty much that that formula of electro, dubstep, and metalcore tied in together. But yeah, so that's just one of the genres that I produce. I produce all genres, and I get hired a lot to make pop music for people and hip-hop tracks and whatever. But the music that I perform out is very cinematic. It's just a collage of everything. And I try to put all those messages in it. I had Ed Snowden in a track, Chuck Fresco, The Venus Project, and even Alex Jones, his crazy ass, love him. All these people are out there trying to, you know, say positive things in a sense. So they're just trying to help. And not everybody's good at it. Some people are horrible at helping, but they're trying. And that's what's important. But, yeah, so, you know, that's what that is.
Well, and one of the great ways of doing that, achieving that, is through music as well as talking to everybody. And we've been around each other in some recent events where there have been a number of different, I don't know, identity politic people or that have all that made us feel good about the movements, you know. And I know that we worked hard. But one of the things that came out of everything was that there was a sense of camaraderie and looking forward to the future with a positive reinforcement and working together. I thought that was wonderful. I'd like you to elaborate a little bit on that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's something that has been brought to my attention by multiple people when they interview me and things, is the sense of camaraderie and brotherhood that surrounds these different more freedom, liberty, human right-based fests and things. So it's a lot of good vibing people, and we're all trying to do it for a positive reason and a positive cause. So it's completely different than when I play shows that are, you know, just clubs down the street, dance clubs and things like that, and here in Hollywood, and everybody is very cutthroat. It's that cutthroat industry mentality, and they're very rude. It's different. So everybody's looking out for everybody in these movements that I've been a part of. The Zeitgeist movement and their fest that I've performed at, and United We Stand and Free and Equal, Panda and the Take Back Tour, and yeah, so they're definitely more positive. I like it.
Fantastic. Well, we certainly like you, and you're certainly talented. And as Dan mentioned, you're a marvelous human being, and that's true. You know, you certainly got my attention as far as the things that you support and how you're working hard to make things better in the world, without a doubt. And I appreciate you coming on to the show. And I want to remind anybody, 646-929-2495, if anybody's got any questions for Dan Johnson and Panda, for the Siren, for myself, or just want to chime in and talk about something, I'd be happy to have you. Guys, you know, I just want to emphasize what I see here with the Take Back Tour. You know, essentially, just the three of us, we're talking about, you know, pretty much three generations almost of people from a standpoint of age, and that also is important. What's going on? We seem to be able to bring a lot of people together from different age groups besides different ideologies, and that's nice. And all you got to do is pay attention, I think, and it's a lot easier to work together with other people to try and make a better society, that's for sure. I know there's so much going on. We just had the big march against Monsanto, which, of course, you both participated in as well as I did. Another great issue that we're dealing with the evil Monsanto organization, and another example, on how more protesters. Dan gave the example earlier with the reference to the activists in Arizona with Normal. Another example of a major activist organization that's happening that can be classified as terrorists. It's amazing how that goes around full circle with how they're trying to trap us. You know, it really is.
Everything is connected.
It sure is. There's no doubt about that.
I really want people to know that they should all go out and experience different cultures
different people's things. You know, they really should be involved in everybody else around the world and not stuck inside of some reality show bubble that glorifies and glamorizes drama and scandal and deceit. We need to get back to the basis of love and positivity and evolve as humans. So it's time for us to take our next step into a free energy-based society, and these technologies already exist. So I went to college for electronic energy engineering for a little bit as well, just to, you know, learn about these things and how to make them. And, yeah, magnetic, geothermal, tidal, all of this stuff. I'll get more into this at the show. But it's being suppressed, and it's time we unite as a world and evolve and put this political differences behind us, religious differences behind us. These things, they really mean nothing except to one individual's subconscious. They don't. It's not a greater worldly thing. We need to focus on all of us and focus on positivity as a whole and rise up together as Earth versus the universe, not all the people versus the people on Earth. So that's all.
They like to keep us fighting, don't they? They like to keep us divided, nitpicking. And it's every single day, all and distractions, and it's coming at all sides. You know, basically, we have to do this.
And the problem seems to be based on, I mean, there are many people who are mad at corporations, many people who are mad at governments, many people who are just mad at the bully on the block. The problem seems to be, if we're going to look at the overarching big picture of everything, the problem seems to be power, the lust for it, and the continual holding on of power. Why are people mad at corporations? They have power, and it's not so much the power, but it's also using that power to force someone to do something against their will. I think there are very few people who would be mad at, let's say, British Petroleum, had they not used their power to force people to do things against their will. Or the government, had they not used their power to force people to do things against their will. So I think if we're looking at overall society, if we're not going to think in little boxes of this law or that law or this concern or that concern or this activist issue or that activist issue, the real problem is us believing authority is legitimate. Us believing that the people, whether they be in a corporation, such as a special interest, or whether they be in government, is us believing that these people are a legitimate authority. It's the same with police officers. Maybe I'll ruffle some feathers with this comment, but what is the difference between kidnapping and arrest? One guy has a costume and the other guy doesn't. That's the only difference. And maybe the kidnapper doesn't have a cage at his house. One is looked at as legitimate, and one is not. And I think if we break this idea, the whole idea that authority over you is illegitimate, we make it known to people that someone claiming authority over you, that authority is illegitimate, then these structures will start to break down themselves. And I think that's what the Take Back campaign helps do, and that's why I'm not going to Congress and lobbying for this, is I want people to start by seeing that Congress and D.C. is illegitimate, work then see that state government is illegitimate, and then that any and all authority that attempts to say it has the right to force you to do something against your will is an illegitimate authority.
Right. Hi, man, I agree. You hit right on the head. And I know, personal information out there a bit, but I have been locked up 7 different times in my life, and all nonviolent. And this is where a lot of my disdain keeps coming from. And I'm a productive member of society, an accomplished artist, and trying to do positive things in the world. And yet, just because I'm walking around, smoking a joint around, you know, going for a walk around the block or something, I get kidnapped. You're exactly right. That's how I felt every single time. I'm like, no, I want to go home. I'm not bothered, but or my
we're losing you a little bit, Casey.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
There you go. Now you're back. You're okay.
Service.
You're okay.
But, yeah, so, you know, I definitely feel like it's kidnapping every single time. And then I'm in some dungeon, you know, for an indefinite detention in a sense. No one tried me yet, put me on trial or provided things. You know, it's ridiculous. So all these nonviolent things that go down and all these people that are ruining people's lives by doing it, the authoritarians in control, they're saying what you can and can't do and dictating you on an individual level right there, taking away your humanity when you are not harming anybody. And it's wrong. People lose jobs over it. They can't make payments to their house, to their car. They lose everything over something so insignificant in the greater picture of life. And it's ridiculous.
And, you know, one of the areas where we find the, I don't know if respect is the right word, but as much as anywhere in society is with the black robes, as you know. I know, Dan, you and I were having a discussion recently where you were discussing how the Supreme Court is held in such high regard by individuals like their gods walking in, you know, walking in a room. And I found that interesting, especially in light of the way the court cases went with the NDAA and how, you know, the Second Circuit decided to rule about the standing issue, which, of course, is the cop-out issue, the way they do that, as you know, instead of addressing the merits like was done at the district court level. But it is interesting, especially when you're talking about identity politics and ideology, where people will just love the judge when they rule a certain way and hate the judge when they rule another way, instead of realizing that, you know, why are we putting all our chips in the basket of this person who has no accountability to anybody other than what he feels like or she feels like? And we've seen it so much, and we've seen the conflicts of interest so much at that level. And I think that, you know, we have way too much respect for what those people do. Now, I take it in balance with, of course, you know, the way our government is structured. But you're right. I mean, the as far as the authority issue is concerned, we definitely give too much deference to that side of it, without a doubt.
Yep.
And then this idea that we don't have a king, but we have nine of them. Huh?
Right.
I mean, you've got rid of the tyrant and the monarch from the British Empire, and then Spain is a great example, because their king just stepped down today. He abdicated the throne today, and he's going to hand it over to his son, and they're calling for a referendum. They're calling for a chance to vote. So what they're doing is they're calling for someone to rule over them. They just want to be able to pretend like they picked the person.
Right.
Yep.
Amazing.
I mean, we live in an oligarchy now, and it's not just me saying that. I mean, that's legit.
It's obvious.
It's a new study that came out. So it's a new study
yeah.
came out, and you guys can look it up. And we are officially, you know, an oligarchy after they documented, I mean, they analyzed thousands and thousands of policy and documents over the past so many years for America. And, this is a big thing. Nobody really knows this, but this is a huge discovery, and this is not good. This is definitely not good. So everything that you've all been taught growing up, of the kind of world you live in and the society you live in, It's completely a fallacy, and we need to fix things ASAP. I mean, we're you know, people are losing their minds. Unemployment, I mean, poverty. People don't even have access to clean water. It's ridiculous. It's crazy. So, yeah, man, people, you got to step it up. Start stepping it up, people. Seriously.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, the oligarchy study actually was very good. I mean, if you look into it and took the time to read it and listen to some of the interviews, actually the way the study was done was very good. I have to give them that without a doubt.
Yeah.
Well, and even on that note, I would say one of the things that surprises me, that surprises people so often, is when you tell them this. the American Revolution was an unpopular revolution. Most people don't know that. They don't know, because it's taught in, even though I was homeschooled, I still had some of the standard textbooks for the state of Ohio. And you're taught in there that, oh, yeah, everybody rose up and decided that to hell with the British king and we're out of here. But it wasn't that way. It was 3% of them that rose up that actually said hell with the British king. There was a third of the country that were Tories. There was a third of the country that couldn't care less either way. And of those 3%, there were the Sons of Liberty and the true Sons of Liberty. The Sons of Liberty were the people going around spraying graffiti on walls and doing a bunch of not exactly ethical stuff. And the true Sons of Liberty set themselves apart from the Sons of Liberty that eventually ended up drafting the Declaration of Independence and fighting and winning the war against Britain. So we had less than 3% of the country that said, oh, hell with this. So I think that one of the problems we have in America, in the activist community, I'm speaking directly to the activist community right now because I know a lot of people listening to this program are, is I used to be in sales. I used to sell Boy Scout popcorn. The market was obviously people who cared about the Boy Scouts. I also used to sell cell phones. The market is someone who wants a cell phone. You don't go try to sell hot sauce to a bunch of Scandinavians. It's not your market. And what people need to realize is activism and liberty activism has a market. Start focusing on it. Don't try to stop talk. I mean, if you want, great, you can practice. But odds are wasting your time talking to the guy at the bus stop is not going to get you much of anywhere. However, where it might get you is it might give you some practice. But my recommendation to do is know your market. A small amount of people all throughout history have always controlled what happened in the political arena. Know your market. Go after those people, and you'll start to see that you don't need to wake everybody up. You just need to get enough people off their butt to actually take action. We don't have an awareness problem in this movement. We have an action problem.
Yes, we do. Yep. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And that brings us around full circle. And guys, I want to say thank you. We're about 6-7 minutes out from ending the show. And I really appreciate both of you guys coming on and spending some time with me. And, of course, I look forward to seeing both of you later on this week, of course, in Albany. I'm looking forward to that. Hemp History Week, on top of everything else, I'm jazzed, without a doubt. It should be a lot of fun. I know Casey, somebody's coming up from Atlanta to see you specifically, which is also cool. Both of you guys be well and have a good night, and I'll be chatting with both of you pretty quick, I'm sure. We have so much to cover.
Awesome. And, sounds good. And again, everybody take care. And thanks for having me on. And check out the videos I direct, the music I produce. It's whatisthesiren.com.
I put it in the chat room. Absolutely.
Click. All right. Take care. Bye.
You take care.
Thanks so much for having me on, Bobby. And thanks so much for bringing an all-star cast on Press One for Democracy and for all the people listening in. You really should check out the Siren's music. I like his music, personally, and that's just a personal thing, but I like his music, and he does a really good job. He's a very professional artist, and he has he's a true believer, and he really has a spirit to help other people around him. So do check out his music, whatisthesiren.com, and obviously takebacktour.com. If you know anybody in New York, or you are going to be in New York or in the area yourself this weekend, that will be at the Armory on Washington Avenue, takebacktour.com. We're looking forward to seeing you there, and we're gonna have fun with or without you.
There you go. There you go. Yes,
thanks,
sir.
Bobby.
Good. You have a good night. All right, everybody. So winding down the show tonight. I appreciate everybody's participation. I want to thank our guest, Jordan Page, fantastic. Sharon Revert, The Siren, Dan Johnson, Dave Rabin from Rustic Justice Productions, and then all our Coffee Party chat room and all the callers that listened in. Appreciate everybody. And remember to be active. I mean, the subject matter of this show was a call to action, and that's what I'm hoping for. I want everybody out there doing their thing to make it a better society, to join us and join other people, not just us. There's so many people out there. Talk to your neighbors. Talk to your friends. Talk to the guy in the coffee shop. I like liberty with my coffee. I can tell you that. Communicate with each other. Drop the identity politics, and you will find that there is so much in common with the people that you talk to, because we're all facing it together. We have an economic problem. We have a constitutional problem. We have an overreach. We have an imperial problem. We have a government 535, 6, and 7, if you count the two at the top, that aren't doing enough for us, doing anything for us unless it benefits them and their wallets. Money in politics is insane. It's hardly, you're hardly able to talk about it. And we've got to put a stop to this. They've given us no choice. So since they're giving us no choice, let's talk to each other. Coffee Party on. Remember, we have other shows coming on this week. Lunch with Loudon is on Thursday, 12 o'clock Pacific time, 3 o'clock Eastern time. Politics and Right with Alberto Willis, 1 o'clock Eastern time. And the progressive show with Bud Fields on, and I apologize for not knowing exactly what it's called, but it's on Sunday, and you need to check it out. He's a good man. He has a good show. I happened to participate in it just yesterday. And everybody, Coffee Party on. And I look forward to the next time I get to interact with everybody. Everybody have a good night.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting to the evening come, watching the ships roll in, then I watch them roll away again, yeah. Sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Sitting on the dock of the bay, waiting time. I left my home, headed for the Frisco Bay. I had nothing to live for. Looked like nothing's gonna come my way. So I'm just gonna sit on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide.